Back with Dan Fogelberg, and we are talking about some of the tracks from The Innocent Age. It's a two-record set now out, and what stands out when one has gone out on the limb to issue, say, two or three tracks in a row on a side that are slower tempo than, you know, the usual varying tracks these days. It's slow, fast, slow, fast. Well, what stands out is that that's not only a risk for you, but a risk for the listener to really go through and listen to that whole thing. How do you picture the person on the other end? Do you have a picture in your mind's eye, someone that's bought the record, taken it home? Is there a little fantasy going on for you, for Dan Fogelberg, on the other end of this whole trip?
No, because when I do a record, I think the people that like my music understand what I'm trying to do, and they're going to accept it. They're not the jaded type listener who thinks something has to fall into a formula or it has to be this way. They're not people who are associated with the music business. Now, you can ask that question, right, only because you're well associated with the music business. Your home listener, I don't believe, thinks that way. I really don't. Mm-hmm. At least the people that listen to mine, they expect the ballads from me, and they accept them and probably prefer the ballads from me, the real hardcore people that like my music. The rock and roll stuff is on there because it's another mode of expression for me and because I do love to rock and roll. But to me, my suit of all the things I do is as a songwriter. And therefore, the way I choose to express myself is the way that they should approach it and accept it. You know, I don't think I have to have a rocker here because it's a ballad. I just don't think that way. You know, mm-hmm. I think this song has to be here because it's a logical extension of what I said before. Especially on this project. I mean, this project, if you listen to it start to finish, has a natural storyline to it. You know, it sets it up with Nexus, which is absolutely trying to define the moment as close as you can come with words, is trying to define the actual moment of existence. And then, the first thing after that is The Innocent Age, Looking Back. Now let's look back. The whole first side says, let's look back. And then the whole second and third side do look back. And they go back to my dad and to Auld Lang Syne and to Only the Heart and all that stuff, you know. And then the fourth side says, okay, enough. Let's come back to the present with empty cages and ghosts and times like these, right? So it's actually a whole, it's meant to flow that way. It's hard for me to think of somebody listening to one side of this by itself. Mm-hmm. I think all the sides stand up by themselves musically. But in order to get the whole picture of this thing, you have to listen to side one to side four.
Suppose we went back now with Dan Fogelberg and looked back prior even to this project. Let's go all the way back. Are there songs that you might like to resurrect for those who perhaps caught on a little late? Billy Joel just put out Songs in the Attic, he calls it, which is a live kind of reissue of a lot of songs that were before his big break, The Stranger. Well, for Dan Fogelberg, the break came, I guess, with Souvenirs, part of the plan. But there are great songs both on that and even before it. Is there one that you just love people to hear that you think they maybe haven't?
Yeah, Be On Your Way. Be On Your Way is one of the favorite songs I've ever written.
Tell me
what
a little
terribly
bit about that
sad song, but what a beautiful melody. I love that song. My mom likes that song a lot. You know, and a lot of people do. And it just kind of buried on Home Free because at that point in time, you know, when you're a new artist, they're looking for something up tempo to try to catch people's ears, you know. And I produced Be On Your Way very uncommercially. I mean, wanted to make it very morose and melancholy. And I thought about recutting that this year. It's a possibility.
Be on your way. Don't try to say that you love me still. If we couldn't find the right dream by now, then we never met. We bid our dues at the door. And then one
Hasn't yet been a best of Dan Fogelberg.
Well, that CBS wants one of those next year. That's what I'm saying. I may recut Be On Your Way and something else for that.
And the funny thing about it is when I was just saying that there hasn't yet been a best of Dan Fogelberg, I almost felt
greatest hits, because if I did a best of, I wanted to do, actually this year I was going to do a triple record best of where I picked the best of,
mm-hmm.
not CBS or the radio or anything, where I took the best tracks that I felt after 10 years, I still like the best, right? And I would give each album one side, you know, but that just didn't happen. This thing came along and kind of took over.
As I was starting to say, it's almost as though this is the best of. It's each album you put out seems to push you a little more. And mm-hmm. I can say that, but I think those that are... Has it ever vexed you that really those of us who have tuned in to Dan Fogelberg's music are continually maybe... impressed more with each project?
I would hope so.
But then that those that haven't tuned in, maybe no matter how proud you can be of a project, mm-hmm. maybe never will, mm-hmm. for one reason or another. Do you ever want to just reach out and get them to?
No, I've succeeded beyond whatever I thought I could. I mean, that's foolish. No, the people that will come to me are the people that are meant to come to me. And no, people have different tastes. I mean, this isn't supposed to be the most commercially accessible product on the world. None of my projects have ever been. I think I do what I believe in, and I think I do good work, and the people that appreciate it, fine. Those that don't, fine. That's good. There's a place in the world for Devo. There's a place for everybody in this business. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You know, I may not like a lot of that stuff, but that doesn't mean it isn't as valid as what I'm doing. There's a place for it. If people are willing to buy it and listen to it, and they like it and they enjoy it, then it's viable. And if people like mine, fine. If somebody likes someone else, great, you know.
It seems sometimes as though the lyrics have told a story that even would include albums before The Innocent Age.
Oh, there's so many back references on this thing. It's ridiculous. I mean, intentionally. That's what the whole project's about. I mean, that's originally why I actually consented to doing interviews this time around, which I don't normally, is because I wanted to explain the intent of this record. I wanted to make it clear what I intended with it. I don't want people coming up and saying, well, you know, Fogelberg ripped off so-and-so and so-and-so on this record, right? He didn't do anything original. Well, that was the whole point. You know, I wanted to play tribute to my musical influences. It's obvious on a few tracks. Obviously, the Buffalo Springfield track, The Innocent Age. The Sand in the Foam is directly for Lightfoot. I even put some of his little warbles in my voice in that one just for fun. You know, there's a lot of those that go
really?
Back. There's Beatles, the Hollies, there's all sorts of little influences. We went back and actually used the guitars that they used. You know, there's some Hofner basses on this, some Rickenbackers, some... you know, and all that stuff. So we actually had a real good time with trying to recapture some of those old sounds in order to get to those artists.
The Innocent Age. That's the one dedicated specifically to Buffalo Springfield.
Oh, sure.
It seems that right from back at the time of Someone's Been Telling You Stories,
mm-hmm.
you really had that sound nailed whenever you wanted to.
But my main influence, really. It's my favorite band.
Uh-huh.
I love the Springfield.
But what happens, and this may put you in an awkward position, Richie Furay sang on that song for you, that's got to be a
it's
thrill.
Wonderful.
You know Stills, and you've finally gotten to meet, and here's the odd part, even surpass a lot of your heroes from the beginning.
It's weird.
That's got to feel a little
it's weird.
Strange. When you lose your heroes, do you still have any left that you're still shooting for?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You got to have heroes. Sure. And my heroes are different now. I'm more mature. You know, I know those people. They're still heroes to me, but they're friends, too. So, you know, you can't idolize friends.
Mm-hmm.
You can love friends, but you can't idolize friends. My heroes now are probably not even associated with the music business. You know, my heroes now are Well, Aaron Copland is the only musician I can think of I really look up to.
Who might some of Dan Fogelberg's other heroes?
I respect Bob Redford a whole lot as a man. I have some of his films on tape. I've seen a few of his things. I don't go out of my way to watch his films, but I respect him as a man for what he's done, the way he lives. I've met him a few times and was very impressed. That's a tough one. Because I'd really have to start thinking, you know. My heroes are from the 19th century, you know. That's where they are.
Heroes
all
are,
of them.
Heroes
Grieg
are hard
and,
to find, you know.
Yeah, most of my heroes are from the 19th century. The Impressionist painters and you know, Grieg and Chopin and those people. Those are my heroes.
It must have been a real kick to have Joni Mitchell. And if I saw any influence on this album that runs throughout... It really is the lyrical love of words that Joni Mitchell had. And she appears on Nexus. But there are two questions about that. Number one, tell me, that must have been a real kick for you to work together.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Absolutely. She's a wonderful woman. Well, Joan came in, and she was a little rough from the night before, as we all were, you know. And, took a while to wake up, as things do. But somewhere around, I don't know, when the sun went down, I guess everybody kind of came back to life. And she really did what I wanted her to do, which was amazing. It was tough for me to go to her and say, I don't want you to do this. I want you to do this, right? Because I have such respect for her. And she really took the thing to a more jazzy place than I wanted it to go. I was looking, again, to pay tribute to her from her folky days, from her blue days, right? That's when she really affected me deeply, was her early stuff. For the Roses is one of my favorite records of all time. Good Lord. And so for me to go out there and actually say, no, don't do that, do it this way, she responded real well. She did it half and half. Mm-hmm. She did half of it for me, and then we let her blow a little bit over the African parts, which we ended up not using. I didn't use them in the track because it just didn't fit as well as I wanted them to.
But it adds such a nice...
Oh, she's the only one who could do it, see? That's the whole thing about this record. I wrote parts for people. You know, I wrote Only the Heart May Know for Emmylou Harris. And there was nobody else who was going to sing that. You know, if she didn't do it, then I was going to do it myself. You know, but nobody else could have done that one. Same with the part for Joni, you know, that little descant vocal in Nexus. Mm-hmm. She's the only one that could have done that. I tried it myself one night, and it just sounded awful. Right? But when Joan did it, it made sense.
speaking of your life now, it's really had to, it has to have changed. I think you'll grant me that.
Mm-hmm.
You could never have expected that things would turn as they have. And you've written a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of constant is there in the chaos?
Oh, wonderful. Maggie's my constant. My fiance. Well, we've been living together for 5 years. So I guess we're legally married in this state and most of the other ones, which is fine. We are married, really. Just haven't put the rings on yet, you know.
Mm-hmm. That'll disappoint a lot of people out there, but sorry.
It's very real, folks.
But isn't there a double-edged...
And the dogs, home. Home is my constant, you know. My privacy is my constant. You know, I go to great lengths to preserve my anonymity from this business. I'm really not interested in being in random notes of Rolling Stone or appearing on the Merv Griffin Show or something. I mean, it has nothing to do with me. My life is an artist, not an entertainer. I don't consider myself an entertainer. I can do that thing if I want to, and I'm going to. I'm going out on tour and all this, and I've learned over the years how to be that when I have to. But I don't really enjoy much of that. I keep myself very close to home, and I have to write this kind of stuff. I need long, long periods of very quiet. You know, I need privacy. I need home. I need friends, and that's my constant. I have a constant now. I'm not worried about losing it anymore, thank God. You know, there was a time 10 years ago when you didn't have that constant, you know, and I was running through singles bars in Nashville, and there's enough pain as a creative artist that you don't need to add any to it, you know?
Like many phrases that are in this album, it's like a puzzle took apart. And I guess you like that. I see the little smile on your face. You're delighted to hear. But there's another aspect to the constant and the chaos. And to be quite honest, I was asking if it was constantly chaotic.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I have a very sedate life.
But that can be...
How often do you see me in Boulder at a bar, Peter? You tell me, you know? I like Boulder.
When I can see in a bar, I...
Right, when you can even see in a bar, right. But, you know, we just don't live that way. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm home, I love home. And the time I get at home, I'm there. I mean, Maggie even says I should leave Lowell. She'll go out and do her horses, and I'll stay up there for days mm-hmm. on end, not even leave, not even go down the driveway to look for the mail, you know.
Is writing songs, that's what you really are, a
mm-hmm.
songwriter.
I think in essence, yes.
Is writing songs a completely solitary...
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is it a lonely kind of profession?
It's a lonely profession. It's the best. It's the best place I know. There's nothing higher than that. That's why I always do it. You know? But no one else can be there, or even close.
No one.
No one.
And then when you first figure, hey, this one's finished, what happens? You take the guitar out for someone?
No, I usually go, you know, have a few beers, a splash of whiskey, go to bed when it's done.
What about the first time you play it for anyone else?
Oh.
What's that
like?
That
differs. Oh, I think it's always special. I always try to give my songs as gifts. I always think that's special. A lot of them go to Maggie. She hears them more than anyone, certainly, first. But I'll save a few things for like Danny Murakami, one of my roadies, or Charlie Fernandez, my road manager, or Irving, sometimes I'll save one just for him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and... I think people think it's special when they were the first person to hear it. Sometimes, actually, I think it's also kind of special sometimes when I give it to an audience for the first time. Like Run for the Roses and Auld Lang Syne, I played before I recorded, right? And some of the nights that I did those, there were benefits for Gary Hart, I think, last year when I first performed Roses. Yeah.
Colorado.
And when you can say that to an audience, you're the first people who are ever going to hear this song, you know? And you're taking a big risk there. They may hate it, you never know, right? But I think that makes people... feel a little special, you know. It's a gift. Music is a gift, you know, and I want to be able to give it.
An only child alone and wild, a cabinet maker's son. His hands were meant for different work, and his heart was known to none. He left his home and went his lone and solitary way, and he gave to me a gift I know I never can repay. A quiet man of music denied a simpler fate. He tried to be a soldier once, but his music wouldn't wait. He earned his love through discipline, a thundering velvet hand. Gentle means of sculpting souls took me years to understand. The leader of the bandit died, and his eyes are growing old.
Peter of the Bandit died, and his eyes are broad.